Perfectionism, is it something to aspire to, or does it get in the way, causing problems not only for the individual, but the people they interact with? If you have a real perfectionist in your midst, you know it can be harmful, perhaps even toxic. So how do you deal with it? Brad Johnson and Dave Smith are with the US Naval Academy's Department of Leadership, Ethics and Law. Brad's a clinical psychologist and Dave, an active duty naval captain, is professor of sociology. Together, they've been researching personality, mentoring and the perils of being a perfectionist. But how did they get interested in the subject? Here's Brad Johnson.
One of the things that you find that connects mentoring with personality is the issue of the obsessive-compulsive personality. And the OC person often is excessively devoted to work. They're anxious. They're concerned that their performance is inadequate. They don't seem to enjoy the work they're doing, although they're overcommitted to it, and often make work miserable for other people as a result of their kind of perfectionistic demand for flawless performance. They're often known as micromanagers to people who work for them. And so when you set about trying to help or mentor somebody like that, it can be a real challenge. And one of the real issues is they often won't be very forthcoming with you about areas where they need to develop, areas where they might not be perfect, as it were. And so it can be a real challenge to try and encourage and push them ahead, encourage them to be human and search for excellence without demanding unrealistic standards for their own performance. So that's really what got us started on this.
You will have encountered this many times, but even I've encountered it, where you meet people and they see being a perfectionist as a badge of honor. Certainly that's how they...
Yeah.
I'm a perfectionist. As, you know, like, you're not a perfectionist, so I'm obviously superior to you, but you don't see it that way.
Right. Well, no. And in fact, all of the research on perfectionism shows just the opposite, that if people are successful when they are perfectionistic, they're just lucky. Because for most of us who are perfectionists, being perfectionist actually harms performance. It takes away from enjoyment. You also stand to have a greater probability of having depression and anxiety and dissatisfaction, relationship problems. Some perfectionists get so distraught by their lack of perfection that they actually feel suicidal at times. So the whole notion of good perfectionism, positive perfectionism, is really an oxymoron. And I think that has been a profound disservice when people sort of laud or venerate the pursuit of perfectionism. So Dave and I are tackling that and raising the data, which shows that, you know, perfectionism mostly gets in your way.
Brad was just saying, you know, that we know that actually being a perfectionist is not a good thing. But I think a lot of people associate being a perfectionist as somebody who's like, who wants achievement and is striving for excellence and setting high performance standards. Now, they are good things.
Absolutely. And I think that's exactly what people confuse, as in the exact word that you used, excellence, I think is a great one that we often talk with our students about. And excellence is honing skills, right? And improving yourself and working towards improvement. I think of it in terms of a lifelong learner pursuit. And I think that's something that we should all develop and hope that we would be doing with our mentees out there as well. So we would differentiate that, you know, perfection unattainable, but excellence is something that we should all be striving for and improving ourselves and becoming these lifelong learners.
So you actually go further, you and Brad, and say that perfectionism, being a perfectionist, it's actually toxic. And there's sort of two parts to that, aren't there?
Absolutely. You know, as Brad was talking about there, so it can be almost debilitating to some extent. Brad and I approaching this from a mentoring perspective in particular is recognizing that in the people that we're working on and developing them and showing them that it's okay and acceptable and even maybe even role modeling and demonstrating this in a variety of different ways. One of the things that we see from a mentoring perspective, if you're working with somebody who, again, exuding these perfectionist attributes, is that they themselves have a lot of these almost impossible standards and expectations that they're setting for themselves. And it's really easy, even as the mentor, to fall into that trap of also doing that for them. And again, you're facilitating it in that way if you're also setting those impossible standards. And the other part is a very critical aspect that we talked about before, and that you're constantly, you know, criticizing oneself for that. And you can also find this, you know, with the mentors, again, with mentees, where they can be very hypercritical about that because you're trying to reach, again, this unattainable or impossible standards that are being set for oneself.
Is it nature or is it nurture? Where does this come from, perfectionism?
What we really find is the best model that explains this is the biopsychosocial model. And, you know, there's great evidence showing this runs in families. You know, there could be a genetic component. It tends to get passed on. And there are two mechanisms there. One is, you know, probably a genetic connection or link that you're powerless to avoid if you come from a perfectionistic family. But then there's also the role modeling. So if I've got a perfectionistic parent, that behavior tends to get passed on to kids. And that's, you know, a toxic experience sometimes for those kids. Not only are the parents role modeling perfectionistic, unrealistic demands, they're often critical of their own kids when their kids are not perfect or don't seem to measure up. And it may come across as something just like subtle disappointment, but children really pick up on that. Mom or dad is disappointed in me. And, you know, I've failed. And so kids can really internalize that in addition to all the genetics. And then there's the cultural piece. Are you in a context where people demand unrealistic performance from you? The best example from the perspective of Dave and I is the experience of women. There are an awful lot of pieces of research on gender showing that women often are more vulnerable to perfectionism because of the experience they have at work. So the context matters. There are a number of biases for women. One is the prove it again bias. So women often have to prove over and over that they're competent. Guys get a free pass based on potential. Women, they get evaluated and scrutinized terribly simply because of their gender. And if a woman blows it or makes a mistake at one point, everyone remembers it. It tends to carry forward and follow her. When a guy blows it, people tend to forgive and forget it. You know, they're evaluating him on his potential. Women often feel more like imposters than men in work environments, especially where there aren't many women. So in that environment, women can easily feel more pressure to be perfect and never make a mistake. That ratchets up their anxiety. It ratchets up maybe some compulsive devotion to work, and it really diminishes their enjoyment of the work experience.
Okay, so the two of you, Dave, have come up with some strategies that you could employ if it's your job or if you're mentoring someone who is a perfectionist. What are the, I suppose, the simple steps that we can take?
Well, so going back to standards again, one, being realistic about standards, and this again, if you're mentoring or working with someone, is understanding what their capabilities are and what they're trying to achieve, and then making sure that you're setting realistic and helping them to see where they're setting realistic standards, right? So they don't come back, and then if they don't achieve, and then they're back to self-criticizing again about the fact that they didn't make it, and getting into this endless circle. I think, as Brad said, I think with women in particular, affirming that they belong, so they can help defeat this prove it again bias or these other biases that often token groups experience, that they're an imposter in some way, and that also that they may be experiencing the effects that, hey, if I fail, that represents, you know, all of my group. So, for example, for women in the military in particular, often they're told that they have to attain perfection because any sort of failure then reflects poorly upon the entire group, not just them. The other part I think that, you know, Brad and I talk about a lot is coming back to us as mentors, that we need to be held accountable and responsible for ourselves. And hey, look, we need to make sure that, hey, if you have perfectionist tendencies, and a lot of us do, that we need to make sure that we're checking those at the door before we start working with our mentee about this. And part of that, if you do have those perfectionist tendencies, is maybe to come out and talk a little bit, be very forthcoming about some of your own flaws and the way that you see things, so that, again, you give them permission to not be a perfectionist and to show how that's helpful and useful.
I would like to give my mentee, who's a perfectionist, some assignments to do less than perfect work and realize they're okay and they survive that. So could you start by just sending me an email full of typos and then not correct them and tolerate that, and don't tell me you're going to do it. Just do it out of the blue and see if you can tolerate not being perfect. So I'd like to use humor. I'd like to use Socratic questioning. I would like to come alongside them and do it in a way that makes them feel supported. But I'm not going to shy away from calling them on it. But it's the way that you do that, I think, that's important.
Is this something that always has to be managed and thought about? Or can you actually, in a way, help someone move away from being a perfectionist?
Yeah, I think you can. I think that the perfectionist is going to find out themselves that there are costs associated with this. So I don't think this is an issue. You know, you may be working with a mentee who's just really compulsive and striving for excellence, but they're not really perfectionists. I think if they're a full-blown perfectionist, you are going to see symptoms of that. And I think the things you're going to see are some depression, some anxiety, clear lack of enjoyment in their work, relationship issues with other employees at work, because they're micromanagers and because they don't have, the ability to join with others in seeking perfection, but not demanding, or in seeking excellence rather, and not demanding perfection. So there are going to be consequences. And I think that your job as a mentor is going to be to help identify those. I notice you're not enjoying your work. I notice that you're late all the time turning in stuff that is due because you have to get it just right. And I'm your mentor. I'm going to tell you that this is going to wreck your career if you can't address this. So I'm going to point it out to you because I care about you, and I'd like you to be able to walk away from that a bit. And, you know, there's some ways I can help you with that, but you have to be willing. You have to be a partner in confronting that.
Brad Johnson and Dave Smith from the U.S. Naval Academy's Department of Leadership, Ethics and Law. I spoke to them via Skype. You can find details of their book, Athena Rising, How and Why Men Should Mentor Women, along with their HBR article on how to mentor a perfectionist. They're both on our homepage, abc.net.au/rn.